This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bulgave. Some people have a passion for shopping. Others abhor it. But no matter what your shopping orientation is, some universal things hold true. My guest, Paco Underhill, is a retail anthropologist who finds out what those universal shopping behaviors are and how stores can capitalize on them. Paco Underhill is the founder and president of EnviroCell, a retail consulting firm whose clients include McDonald's, Kmart, and Hewlett-Packard. He and his colleagues have videotaped hour after hour of people shopping. What they found is that most shoppers turn to the right when they enter a store, and most people won't notice the merchandise in the front of a store because they need a few moments or paces to adapt to the retail environment. Paco Underhill refers to the front third of a store as the decompression zone. And then there's the butt brush theory.
This is the simple premise that we are a posteriorly sensitive species, which means the more likely we are to be brushed from the rear, the less likely we are to convert from a browser to a buyer. Let me explain. I'm up at a counter. I'm looking at ties. I know that in order to purchase a tie, I need 45 seconds worth of peace. If I have somebody brushing me from the rear, the chances of my having that 45 second of peace are significantly less. And therefore, I tend to come, look, and move on rather than have the time to be able to make that selection.
Now, does it just amount to that, that we don't like risking getting our derrières brushed? Or is it a kind of an inter-animal space issue?
It's an inter-animal space, and you have to understand it's not just humans. It's generally mammals tend to be sensitive to being approached from the rear.
Do we shop by touch? Is that something that you found in your videos, that people handle sweaters and shirts the way they choose ripe fruit in supermarkets?
You know, we like to pet. And it's something we've actually tracked the number of times something has to be touched before it's bought here. We call it a product conversion ratio. And it's amazing the number of fingerprints that are on stuff on the floor of stores here. Do you know that a typical lipstick has to be handled by 8 people before it's bought? Isn't that enough to make you want to spray it with Lysol before you stick it in your purse?
Oh, that is really disturbing. And that brings me to something else that I think you maybe you've noticed in videos. I've seen people, and perhaps it's mostly women, circle around something they're interested in a store, like an animal circling its prey.
I think it's interesting, both that factor. The other is that sales tend to come in strings. And let's say we have a perfume display at Neiman Marcus, and there are 12 sales that happen off that display over the course of an hour. What happens is that those 12 sales all come in little strings. One person sees somebody shopping, and as soon as that person leaves, they come up because they're curious. I mean, we are an intensely curious species about what other people are seeing or doing. And that circling phenomenon is often, I like to think of it as a sort of devil and angel in somebody's head. You know, the angel is going, just, you know, listen, just take a look and walk on by. And the devil is going, ooh, let's go take a look. That looks pretty nice.
And how aware of this are department stores or stores in general? I mean, it seems like they're pretty well aware. Do they need you to make them more aware of it?
I think stores have, in general, retail has gone through quite a remarkable change over the past 15 years. On the one hand, we have seen the era of the sort of the homegrown merchant come to an end. Whether this with Robert Campos' purchase of Federated, and we've seen retail become more of a business. On the other hand, the retail landscape is littered with companies that were run as businesses that didn't have some sensitivity to their customers. And we've done a good job, I think, helping businesses get back to the retail aisles and focus on what it means to try and be a good merchant.
Let's talk about positioning of a store. I thought it was interesting that you found that people tend to ignore stores that are placed next to federal buildings or post offices or banks or other non-retail establishments that don't have windows, obviously, with items in them to look at, because their eye doesn't go back to perusing windows until a certain number of feet after they pass the bank or the post office. Did you figure this out also from videotape?
This is been a well-documented piece of information that actually predates my days as a researcher. But the premise is simply that as somebody walks past a bank or an airline office or a dull street front window, their pace tends to speed up. And that since they aren't visually engaged with a window, once they pass that dull storefront, it takes them a little time to slow their pace back down and for their peripheral vision to expand, which is the reason why a good commercial real estate manager or a good city manager will think about the positionings of different types of businesses on a street in a way that they don't hurt each other.
How do men and women differ in how they shop?
Couple of things here. I think, first of all, let's just take the grocery store. Men seem to extract more pleasure out of the grocery store than women do. And I think most spouses will argue that when they send their husband off to the grocery store to do the family shopping, that they spend more time, they spend more money, and they get more extraneous stuff. We also know that as we look at the changing dynamics of American shopping, that and we witness more men and their kids shopping together as well as opposed to moms and their kids shopping together, that kids do a much better job of extracting stuff out of daddy than they do out of mommy. I think mommy's much more experienced at saying no. We also know that men often in certain product or retail categories tend to be more buyers than shoppers. If I, as a male, walk into Victoria's Secret, I'm not there to visit a temple of sensuality. I'm there, I'm probably embarrassed, but I'm there because I have something that I'd like to buy, but I'm not quite sure what. In general, it's a good idea from the store's perspective. If you see a man walk into a lingerie section, serve him quickly and try to trade him up. He'll probably spend more money than he thought. He needs some help. He'd like to walk out the door pretty quickly and preferably take something away in a plain brown bag. Okay? If I go to the printer aisle at CompUSA, if a woman walks in, she's not there because she's just read a piece in PC Magazine, generally. She's not there to visit a temple of technology. She's there because women are the largest emerging entrepreneurial class in America. They are there because they need a technology. They're not there often with the fascination for tools. And yet the level of service that a woman gets walking into a computer store here is significantly less than a man gets. Yet they convert at a higher ratio. They are willing to listen, but they need to walk out with a product in their hands because it's something that's driven. Now, this doesn't mean that somehow we need to start packaging things differently, but we need to be aware of the fact that the traditional gender identifications with certain product categories don't work anymore.
My guest is Paco Underhill. He's the president and founder of EnviroCell, and that's a company that offers consulting services to retail stores about how people shop. Paco, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with shopping anthropologist Paco Underhill. He's the founder and president of EnviroCell, a retail consulting firm. Let's talk now about the senior citizen consumer group. You say that that is the biggest consumer population now that stores aren't targeting correctly, besides women, I assume. How should they target senior citizens, or how should their approach be different to attract senior citizens rather than the middle-aged or families or men or the rest of the consumer world?
I think the issue here is not just the issue of seniors. The issue is understanding that America's consumer base is aging, period. And that at 45, I don't consider myself a senior. And yet many of the same issues that seniors are concerned with increasingly affect me.
Like what?
For example, nobody is going to go broke going into the 21st century, assuming a lot of us should be wearing our reading glasses and aren't. That's theme one. Theme two is recognizing that if you're a store that that a chair is no longer an amenity, it's a marketing tool. That if I and my significant other walk into the Limited and she has a place to comfortably plant me, she becomes a much more effective shopper because she knows I'm comfortable. I'm not going, honey, you know, can we leave now? You know, I've got nothing to do.
I'm thinking of another example I think your research group came up with, which involved chairs that were placed too close to the Wonder Bra display.
Okay. This was a story we were working for a lingerie manufacturer who'd very proudly put their Wonder Bra display right up at the front of the section or the store. And this particular site had no seating there, but there was a window casement. And we observed one afternoon. There were two sort of aging codgers who had planted themselves at this window casement, who I think were slightly hard of hearing and had this quite animated discussion each time somebody approached the Wonder Bra display about whether the person needed a Wonder Bra or not.
Animated and loud, right?
It was animated and loud here. And one of the things that we walked away from that with is the premise that there are many types of garments that sales are linked not to the number of people who are exposed to it, but the proximity to the dressing room.
Let's talk about kids and shopping, and especially parents with kids trying to shop. I've noticed here in Philadelphia there's a store, IKEA, which has a place where you can park your kids for half an hour while you go and shop. And they're well, pretty well cared for, I hope. Now, I've made more ill-considered snap buys because I had to frantically fit all the shopping into just 30 minutes. It's like playing beat the clock. And it seems like a brilliant idea. I'm surprised there aren't more stores of that size who've caught on to that.
One of the things about the changing dynamics of the American family is that as there are more families where both mother and father work, we have noticed the trend over the past 10 years that we're taking our kids to a greater variety of places. And I would argue that this is not just true at places like IKEA, but I can remember trying to get across to senior officials at a major California bank that 12% of the bodies walking in the door at a typical suburban bank are under age 7. And that if you haven't included some form of child-proofing criteria to your furniture selection, you're being foolish. We also, in the same session, tried to get across to those two vice chairmen that for many platform officers in a bank, the most effective closing tool they have is a jar of lollipops. If I can keep the kid quiet, I can close the sale. But this issue of child-proofing a retail environment or thinking about children on the floor of a store is something that we as American retailers aren't always doing the best possible job. For example, in France and in Italy, many grocery stores and mass merchandisers or hypermarkets provide kid-sized shopping carts, which is in effect teaching the kids to become good consumers. But it also gives them something to do here. They have something, you know, to push as they move through the store. We're dealing with another problem here in the U.S. as it relates to kids, is that unlike France and Germany, we are often unwilling to leave our kids in the care of a stranger. And that as successful as IKEA is, there are many American, you know, families where the basic level of paranoia as it relates to their children is still very high.
I'm curious if you were always an observer before you started observing shoppers. I know that you grew up with a stutter. Did that make you more of a watcher than a talker?
I am the son of an American diplomat, and I grew up outside the U.S., and certainly having not always speaking the language, moving every 2 years, and having what is now a slight stutter, but what was then an acute one, made made it necessary for me to look as opposed to ask here. And I think that's a skill that I've simply translated into a profession.
Is it still a mystery to you what people buy and why people buy what they do or what they look for in shopping? And I'm thinking that there are all sorts of theories that are, I guess, half in jest about how shopping for us today is what hunting and gathering was for us back in prehistoric time.
Well, let's be cognizant of two things. First, we are a social species, and that shopping has always been the opportunity that we've used since our time as hunters and gatherers simply to look at each other. And that's a lot of what drives us to the marketplace, whether we're in Papua New Guinea or at the local Newport Mall. On the other hand here, there is damn little at this point in our lives that we actually need. And that the reason we're out there in a commercial environment is to enjoy ourselves and to have a certain entertainment. And I think it's no irony as we move into the 21st century that more and more retailers are focused on our pleasure in shopping. That the rise of the Disney store or Nike Town or the new Paramount store about to open in Chicago is all focused on, you know, how can I give somebody a pleasurable experience from the moment I walk in the door.
Do you like to shop?
I do.
A special kind of shopping or?
It's field work here, and that... as I go into a store, I'm there both as a, you know, consumer and also as a voyeur or an observer here, and I get enormous pleasure out of both.
And did you always like to shop? I mean, do you remember this being part of your psyche as a child?
I can remember a very sort of pivotal experience. We were stationed in Eastern Europe here in Warsaw in the late 50s, early 60s. And I remember as a small boy, we crossed the Iron Curtain and went in to Germany. And I remember wandering through a store in Germany with just my eyes wide open, almost as if I was one of those Eastern Europeans all of a sudden exposed to commercial culture. And I must have fingered and looked and many things, and I was looking for a present for my mother, and I ended up buying her a pair of yellow rubber gloves here. And I don't think there was any purchase I've made since that had so much time, care, and attention devoted to it as those yellow gloves, which I think my mother didn't understand and tossed off in a corner of her suitcase and probably threw away shortly thereafter.
Oh, how could she know? Paco Underhill is the founder and president of EnviroCell, a retail consulting firm.